This is James from Soundpunk.com.
And this is his co-host, Mike. How you doing today?
I'm wonderful. Yourself?
Oh, pretty good. How's your vacation been going this week?
Fairly relaxing and awesome. No out-of-state plans, no big plans. I've been making a point to go hang out with a bunch of my friends.
Really?
Take care of some website business.
Well, that's good.
I shipped out some patches to some people. I had a sale.
Oh, you had a sale on your website.
I had a sale. I put in the shop on the website, and I just now finally had a sale of a patch going all the way to Canada. Thanks, Scott. Thanks for the set patch buy.
Thanks, Scott. Look forward to new great deals coming up at survivalpunk.com.
Yeah, I'm talking to a new vendor on getting T-shirts made. So they're a small local company. Maybe they'll work out.
Want to throw out their name?
I don't even know what it is. They're in Ashton City. I stopped by and talked to them today. And
if things work out, you'll throw out their name.
Right. Well, you remember. It seems like their prices might be a little high, especially on the female shirts. Mm-hmm. It could be like $12 a shirt. So that kind of cuts into my profit. And
Yeah, you need to find something a little bit
more. Before, I was getting them for about $8, but I gotta find someone new to work with. So.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's business is tough.
Yeah.
Business is tough. What do we got coming up on the show today? Gonna talk about five mistakes that preppers often make. Disaster looms. We're gonna be talking about the Tudor Farm. That's gonna be our main topic for the day. It's a series that
Well, not just the Tudor Farm, but the entire BBC Farm series.
The entire BBC Farm series. Okay. Right. We're gonna have a new segment in the show. It'll be a game segment. We're coming up. We'll get to that eventually. Our survival gadget for the week. Gonna be talking about seeing Rich Froning. Breaking PRs and a massage that you were interested in. That you got. And why don't we just jump right into it? It's time for our first sponsor of the day, JM Bullion.
Right, JM Bullion, for all your online gold and silver needs. They've been with me, I want to say, coming up on a year next month. So I'll have to hit them up for a renewal soon. Make sure you contact them and tell them Survival Punk sent you.
Remember, silver and gold is always an excellent investment.
Right. If you listen to the Prepping 101 series, you'll know why you should be investing in silver and gold. I'm a bit heavier in silver. I do own some gold.
Mm-hmm.
Not much at all. Not large quantities. It's just kind of out of my price range.
Now, where did you get most of your silver and gold?
JMBullion.com. Actually, I work with a guy that has made some pretty big sales, or he's bought a lot of gold, not gold, he buys silver. He's bought a lot of his silver from JMBullion.com. And one day at work, he was like, because we always talk about silver at work. He's another manager there, and that's one, like, we share the gold, the silver stuff. So he was like, hey, I found a new place to buy silver online. It's got a real good deal. You should check them out. And I was like, well, who are they? He's like, JMBullion.com. I'm like, yeah, I know them. Yeah. It's like, yeah, they're my sponsor. So,
all right. And where can you find them on the web?
JMBullion.com or head to survivalpunk.com and look in the right-hand margin as always.
All right. Now it's time for our first news story of the day. Why don't you tell me a little bit about these five prepper mistakes? Didn't have a chance to talk about it before the show. What do we got going on here?
Let's scroll through and then see. Unfortunately, it's not a nice bullet point. I like bullet points.
Well, you are a gun collector, so I'd imagine you would.
Five prepper mistakes that make you look dumb. Okay, it's not in bullet point, but I can go through here. Prepping with fear.
Prepping with fear. Now, what do you mean by that exactly?
It says, prepping out of fear will cut all... Prepping out of fear, you will see you cut all the corners that can help you. This is wrote really wet, weird.
Prepping out of fear will see you cut all the corners that can help you to be smart with your money. We certainly don't have a lot of cash laying around. We thus that to... What the...
That's what I'm saying!
Did Did William Shakespeare write this? We thus that to stretch the little we have as far as we can. Sorry. The world is not ending tomorrow. Convince yourself. Sit in strategies. It's, yeah, this is written.
It's very, got even more typos than Survival Punk. So I'll run through the list real quick, and then we'll talk about it a little bit. So prepping with fear, having inadequate water, gear, lack of knowledge as well as technical know-how, dependency on ammo and guns. I don't know that I exactly agree with all of these, but let's see. Having inadequate water. I think that's a prep that often is overlooked by preppers.
Yeah, I mean, you got to always take into consideration water is the oil of the human machine.
Yeah, you can only go... having your 100 pounds of MREs and stuff is nice, but if you die of thirst in 7 days, then...
Right, I mean, you're set...
It's 3 days without water.
Yeah, you can have like 100 pounds of MREs. Like you said, it's not going to do you a lot of good out in the middle of the desert if you dehydrate. Right.
So I do agree with that. Having enough water, the general rationale is a gallon per person per day.
That's what I was going to ask you, a gallon per person per day.
Right. You could get by a bit more or a bit less, but a gallon is a good thing. Gear. Let's see what they have to say about gear.
Avoid putting overemphasis on gear. Rationalize the kind of gear that you are going to buy. Putting too much focus on this also derives you one essential focus that you should be focusing on. How many times you use the word focus in one sentence? Having the know-how or knowledge. Old-timers, just like newbies, frequently tend to put obsessive emphasis on gear. Over-dependent on stockpiling gear can actually hinder your ability to endure without it. There is no magic piece in the kind of gear you have. What can improve your chances of surviving against all odds is having the old-fashioned knowledge and training. It will definitely go a long way to see you overcome disaster after disaster.
Alright, I agree with this to a point.
To a point?
To a point. I agree that I feel that you should buy the best gear that you can afford.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're going to buy a crappy knife and it breaks on you, you're screwed.
Right.
I also believe that whatever gear you get, I don't like to leave stuff in packages. I have to go out and play with it, and if it breaks.
I mean, having a great, awesome, expensive piece of gear doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot if, when the time comes, you have no idea how to use it.
Right.
No, you have to go out and practice stuff with it.
Yeah, I mean... I've cheaped out on some things. Like, I have a used military large Alice sack. I paid $25 for it off the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Indestructible, beat down. My main survival knife, though, I paid almost $200 for.
Well, a good survival knife, I mean, that is essential. I mean, right. God only knows what kind of stuff you're going to need that for.
Right. I mean, on the flip side, though, once at a gun store, or not gun store, a gun show, I saw what I thought was a U.S. Marine Corps K-bar for $25.
Now, for those of us not in the know, could you define a K-bar to me?
K-bar is the fight. If you've ever seen a Marine holding a knife, mm-hmm, with those like stacked leather plates and stuff on it.
Ah.
That's a K-bar.
That's a K-bar. Okay, gotcha.
So they had
my
one of these
so
for $25. And I jumped on it. Like, I didn't even... I kind of held it and played with it. Didn't look it over too well. It had a real sharp edge on it.
Mm-hmm.
And normally, you find them for about $60.
Right.
So at $25, basically, I threw money at the guy as quick as I could and ran off. A while later, while looking at it, I noticed that it had stamped Made in China on it. It was a knockoff.
Oh.
So from that point on, because for about a year or so, maybe two, that was my main go-to survival knife. Whenever I went camping and everything, I'd take that out and do all my batoning and everything with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was so angry at what I thought, blowing $25 on a piece of Chinese crap, my goal was to go out there and break it. I went out there every time I went out in the woods to break this knife. I batoned through logs huge, like... And this thing took everything I threw at it and stayed sharp. So sometimes you can luck up.
Right.
I'm not going to suggest that you go track down and find this K-bar knockoff. But not all cheap gear is bad. But usually you want to buy the best that you can get.
Now, one thing I think people would overlook is gear manuals. Stuff that teaches you how to do things. I mean, your brain is one piece of gear that you can't possibly lose. And
right.
Unless it's a zombie apocalypse. Yeah. But
and that's the next thing on the list here. Lack of knowledge and technical
know-how. Oh, well,
we'll
just talk about that then.
Yeah. I've got tons of books on everything you could possibly want. I haven't had time to apply all that knowledge. I think I have books on like ham radio, and mm-hmm. I've read through them until my eyes start bleeding. I just can't. Ham's not for me.
Oh, really?
It's a great skill to have, and you know, bless you if you have it, but you just can't learn everything. Mm. You pick the stuff that meshes with you, and then go apply it and use it.
Right.
Having books on how to do stuff is nice, but having the muscle memory and the experience of doing it
right
is different. If you read in the book how to make a bow drill fire, that's not making a bow drill file.
I mean, it's a good place to start.
It is. But when you get that, go practice and apply that knowledge.
Practice making perfect and whatnot.
Yeah, there's a lot of like armchair survivalists that have not done or tried anything.
Your co-host is one of them.
Last week, you were play mocking me in your front yard, like when I was trying to make a fire with all the sticks and twigs you had in the yard. Right after it rained for a couple of days.
Yeah, it had been raining earlier.
And you're like, "Ah, you schmuck! You're not gonna be able to make a fire. Everything's wet out there." And it was definitely one of the harder fires I've
made. I was just using reverse psychology.
You were just playing with me with your kids. Yeah, like, James can't make that fire.
Yeah, I was busting your chops.
Right. And I'm not going to lie, it was a tough fire.
You still got that fire built relatively quickly, though.
Well, yeah. But it was a pain in the butt, I'll tell you that.
We were sitting there watching that fire, feeding that fire, and you could listen to the water sizzling.
Yeah, yeah.
It sounded like bacon on a griddle, trying to make that fire.
Best smell ever.
It didn't smell like it just sounded like it.
Yeah. I'm a little interested on this last one, dependency on ammo and guns. And I'm going to try to read this with their funky writing. As a prepper, you should never be too reliant on use of guns and ammo for survival. Guns may be truly one of the most important items that you may have, but relying on your ammo and guns to survive might be the last mistake that you will ever do in your life. People tend to perceive that guns and ammo can bring you real food on the table, but that reality is you may die finding the food. Disasters change, and the kind of disaster you are prepping for might not necessarily be the disaster that will happen. Therefore, prepare fully. Like we said, knowledge and training are key survival tactics.
Now, I can see their point to this. I mean, it is good to have firearms. You never know when you're going to have to hunt. Never going to know when you need protection from various things.
Right.
I mean, as far as hunting, you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. With just a gun. I mean, guns
right, and then traps and snares are great, too. For a lot of people that have guns, have never hunted, myself included, not yet anyway, relying on that you're going to be able to go take game during a disaster,
mm-hmm.
I think is a little foolish.
Oh, yeah.
I could probably go take small game and stuff, but I've never butchered anything. Gutting an animal would be a little confusing for me.
Absolutely.
That's what I'm saying. Like, until you, an experienced hunter wouldn't have a problem, but newbies like us, I wouldn't rely on something that I've never done before.
Exactly.
During a stressful situation.
And you got to remember, every experienced hunter out there was once a newbie.
Right. And secondly, like reports like during the Great Depression was like basically everything was hunted so hard that you couldn't, like, deer were damn near extinct.
That's hard to believe.
Yeah. And then most of the people caught a lot of the animals like by easier methods. Like there was a lot of like rat traps nailed to trees to catch squirrels.
Wow. I'd never even heard of that before.
Yeah. You just
Nail a rat trap to a tree to catch a squirrel.
Yeah. I mean, if you guys have squirrel problems, I think you have a squirrel stew.
The only solution. Squirrel problems we have is they don't do enough cute and cuddly things out in the yard for her to get pictures of.
Oh, yeah. So that's it. This off of... It's the GB Tribune, Great Bends, Kansas. And I'm sorry, but their writer, Maya... Probably needs to go back to writing school.
Yeah, yeah, learn some diction and grammar and everything like that, you know, forming sentences.
This was really hard to read.
It really kind of was. You're using some of the wrong pronouns there, Maya. Sorry to be critical about it, but, you know, it's kind of our thing.
Right, so link will be in the blog if you want to read this as well.
You know, another good tip... because guns will eventually run out of ammo. If you're out there long enough, you're going to run out of ammo. You should learn to do other things with your guns.
I bet this was a paid article.
Why do you say that?
I get a lot of offers occasionally. We'll delve into the back end here, guys. So a lot of times people will be willing to pay you money to write articles around links that they want so they get link traffic, basically, and it gives them better Google page ranks.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes... I can read an article and I know that there's one link in this entire article for have sufficient adequate supplies, not only of clean drinking water. And I'm sure this website, engineeringchallenging.org, paid this lady to put that link in there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not gonna lie, in the past, if it's a company that lines up with what I'm doing, I'd be willing to do that. But sometimes it's just off the wall stuff. Like, will you write an article to our online casino? No. No, I'm not going to do that.
That has nothing to do with
survival.
They're
like, but you can write how you could use online casinos to survive heartbreak. No. Have you looked at my website? Seriously?
I had a couple, like, surviving heartbreak.
I almost took it because this British company was offering me £180 to put in one link. And I did, for you guys, I told them to go screw. I'm not breaking my integrity even for £180.
You refused to sell out to the British.
Yeah, I did, actually, yes.
I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
I am. I'm proud of you. That's a moxie.
Especially for $200-some-odd U.S.
Yeah. Now that
before I had any sponsors. But anyway... you guys can now understand how the web works a little bit. Like, I get so many of these offers that I'll see other people that take them, and I'm like, oh, really? Come on.
Yeah, your integrity has to survive, too.
Yes.
All right, moving right along to our next topic of the day, disastrous looms.
Disaster looms, why today's global supply chains are at risk. I just gave you part of the title so you could not get, like, writer's cramp writing down all these things on our prep cards.
I thought people were being killed in horrible weaving accidents.
Horrible weaving accidents. Let's read through some of this article here. The recent occurrence of faulty ignition switches in General Motors' car should serve as a wake-up call to companies that lack good visibility into their global supply chains. But most have failed to implement adequate supply chain risk management programs that could head off such problems. That's the view of Yves
Leclerc.
Leclerc.
Yeah. Managing director with business consultancy West Monroe Partners. Despite a raft of natural disasters and quality failures over the year, he said many companies have yet to step up to the requirements of an effective risk management effort. You might think that 13 deaths and the recall of 6.1 million cars since February would have top manufacturing executives scurrying to adopt controls that would prevent such nightmares from occurring in their own organizations. And maybe they are, but neither the 2013 floods in Thailand nor the 2011 earthquake, tsunami, and nuclear disaster in Japan have resulted in sweeping risk management measures, Leclerc said. The business world, it would seem, has a short memory. Many companies remain fixated on boosting shareholder value in the short term. It can be tough to sell top executives on the value of expensive programs that could shield them from disruptions caused by disasters, natural or otherwise. What is the value of a non-event? The clerk was disheartened to hear one of his clients brush off the necessity of a plan for coping with lost or delayed containers, even during the critical peak shipping season. His reaction was, if I'm in trouble, all my competitors will be too. It's no big deal. Even the most innovative companies are vulnerable. Leclerc cites that allegedly defective gas pedals that forced Toyota into a $1.2 billion settlement with the U.S. Justice Department, with recalls numbering in the millions. Toyota is considered to be one of the pioneers of assembly line quality and efficiency, yet it found itself facing accusations of criminal mismanagement. In a multi-billion dollar enterprises like GM, Toyota can't avoid costly lawsuits due to quality glitches or poor management. How can smaller companies weather their own supply chain disasters? On top of that, revelations of poor working conditions in overseas factories can have a serious impact on global brands. Regardless of the issue, it all comes down to a lack of visibility coupled with inadequate response plans when the inevitable problems occur. The new emphasis on sustainability and safety only exacerbates the challenge. A recent report from the Supplier Ethical Data Exchange, SEDEX, found inadequate controls with a lack of compliance with both local and international law among companies doing business in Mexico, Brazil, Colombia, and Peru. Management in these countries is failing to meet rules on the environment, health and safety, and working hours, SEDEX says. The state of affairs extends beyond Latin America. Witness the deadly factory fires that occurred in Bangladesh over the past 3 years. Leclerc believes companies need to take a multi-pronged approach to risk management. He cited the concept of the AAA supply chain, a term coined in 2004 by Stanford University professor Hall L. Lee. The idea of supply chains being agile, adaptable, and aligned can apply just as much to the discipline of risk management, he said. The quality of alignment is especially relevant to the conversation about risk. It acknowledges the fact that good supply chain management ranges far beyond the walls of an individual company. To embrace multiple tiers of suppliers upstream and service partners and customers downstream. A workable action plan, said Leclerc, must be executed at the strategic, tactical, and operational levels. From a strategic perspective, companies need to map their global supply networks. In the process, they gain knowledge of the impact that a disruption will have on operations. Tactically, they should look to the end customer to achieve a full understanding of demand and how a fall or rise in supply will impact service. Operationally, they should be zeroing in on the execution-based tasks like warehousing and transportation. Functions related to basic blocking and tackling shouldn't be overlooked as important means of alleviating global risk, Leclerc said. In all cases, companies must ensure continuity of supply should current feeds be interrupted. Many seek to cut costs and boost purchasing power by reducing suppliers to the bare minimum. While the strategy can result in a leaner supply chain, it shouldn't rule out the use of alternative vendors that can be called on in an emergency. Good risk management is both a technology and business process effort, Leclerc said. Companies have spent untold amounts of money on enterprise resource planning, ERP, systems to manage financials and other basic functions, but they're less advanced in acquiring systems that enable end-to-end visibility and collaboration among all supply chain partners. At the same time, they need to tear down the functional silos that keep various disciplines from communicating key information on raw materials, goods in production, and inventory throughout the chain.
It's a lot to think about.
That is a lot to think about. The supply chain is pretty fragile, so it looks like in there they're trying to come up with risk management to keep the supply chain more agile, so that if something does go wrong, they can get the things in there. So many places now depend on just-in-time supply chains.
Mm-hmm.
All the big box stores, Walmart. The back rooms aren't nearly as big as they used to be.
Really?
And they're trying to get those back rooms even smaller and sleeker. So that the basic principle that most stores have now is for things to come in off the truck straight to the shelf.
Right.
And then have it replenish at the rate that things sell so that they're not keeping them in the back room. Because
that's very short-sighted, if you ask me.
It is kind of short-sighted, but
from a profit standpoint, you're not making money on things in your back room. You're paying, you're spending money for storage of things to be in your back room. Yep. You make the most profit if things come in and go straight to the floor and sell in that manner. Okay. If they're sitting in the back for long periods of time, it's so. But for disaster situations, that's why you see those pictures on Facebook of like grocery store shelves being wiped out. Because there isn't a supply of that stuff in the back.
Exactly. I mean, when you, okay, so you've got a great product and it's selling, and you're not backroom, you know, stocking it. You're just straight from the truck right onto the sales floor. What happens if you sell out in the first day and your next truck doesn't come for a week? Guess what? All the business that you would have gotten by having a stock of that in the back is now going to your competitors who had the foresight to stock that stuff, to keep a backlog of it in the back. So as soon as the shelf is empty, boom, they can refill it again without having to wait for the next truckload.
Right. But, I mean, the big stores usually get a truck every single day, if not even multiple trucks a day.
Well, it's like the guy said earlier. I mean, a lot of the big stuff, I mean, yeah, a lot of them do get multiple trucks in a day. But think about it. The one guy, when asked about it during that article, he said, well, if I'm having the trouble, I imagine all my competitors are having the exact same trouble. Right. So what's the big word? You can't think like that. You got to think you're the only person having that trouble. You've got to be prepared for yourself. Don't worry.
Right.
I mean, you've got to worry about what they're doing, if they're doing better than you. But you've got to watch out for yourself.
Yeah.
You've got to make sure that, I mean, if you don't have the freaking foresight to prepare for stuff like that, to prepare for that eventual disaster that's going to wipe out your shelf. Guess what? Your shelves are going to be empty. So are your cash registers. So are all the customer lines. Yeah. Think ahead.
I mean, from my point of view, I'd rather just have a stockpile of that stuff myself because I know the stores are not going to have that stockpile.
Right.
So if a snowstorm hits Tennessee and I can't leave the house, meh, I don't care.
I mean, you want a stockpile that your friends will be like, hey, can I come shop in your closet?
God. Yeah. I could feed all my friends and most, pretty much all my family.
Yes, in a
a long time.
In a survival situation, less is not always more. Alrighty then, it's time for our next sponsor ad. That was kind of a heated debate we had going on there. I wouldn't really call it a debate, but we kind of got into that one. We sounded like professionals.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did. We're moving along. We are pundits. All right, Black River Outpost. Tell us about Black River Outpost.
Black River Outpost, for all your tactical and survival prepping needs online, family-owned and operated up in Michigan. I was looking at their Facebook page earlier, and they just welcomed, I guess, a new admin on their Facebook page to answer all your homesteading and farming questions.
Really?
Cheryl from the Crooked Tree Farm in Michigan. They're all friends.
So if I wanted to go out and start a farm right now, they'd be able to help me out there at Black River Outpost?
Cheryl could. If you
Cheryl
ask them on
could.
Facebook, yeah. She's constantly raising goats. She was appalled when I said I was looking for goat meat to eat. She's like, not the babies! Yeah. But yeah, Black River Outpost. Check them out.
Where can you find them?
BlackRiverOutpost.com
and
SurvivalPunk.com. You guys should look in every single post because they're in the bottom of it.
Awesome.
Yes.
That's just awesome. Alrighty. It's funny you mentioned farming because that brings us right to our main topic of the day. The BBC Farm
Series? The BBC Farm Series, yeah. I've been watching this series probably for, I don't know, 2 years maybe.
Now, why about you gave me some homework to watch some of it, which I failed at miserably.
Right, yeah. I thought you could have plowed through at least one episode.
I got 10 minutes in, fell asleep.
Yeah.
I'm kind of horrible.
Yeah, it's not your cup of tea, but...
Armchair Survivor.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, it's... The BBC has been doing this series for a while, where the majority of the series was they send some historians and archaeologists to live on a farm for a year as the people of that time period would have lived.
Which, the premise of that sounds awesome, if you ask me. I like that sort of thing.
Right. I like history, and I like learning how they solve problems with their primitive methods.
I mean, and they just delve right into history. They become part of that history.
Yeah, costumes. They have to live that lifestyle for all of them, except for, I think, one show was an entire year.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, they have guests. Like, their family comes to visit them sometimes, but they're on that farm. And their fate is tied to their crops growing and, like, they're eating the period food, which sometimes is gross, like eyeballs and stuff cooked in meat pies and whatnot.
Now, one thing I noticed from the few minutes that I watched of the first episode of the Tudor Farm.
Right.
Part,
the last one that came out.
Basically, the town's like basically being ruled by the church.
That one, yeah, the monastery. They are tenant farmers working for the monastery. So they would rent their parcel of land from the monastery, and they would have to turn a profit, which is one of the first times in English history where the farmer was actually focused on making a profit because he had to pay his rent.
Up until that point, it was just sustenance farming?
Pretty much, yeah, pretty much sustenance farming. I was trying to think, what is, when you work for your landowner...
Indentured servant.
That's it, yeah. There's that. Brain fart. So, yeah, that. And then this, they're actually, like, really focusing on trying to do all these tiny things. Bee farming. Everything else. Grazing their livestock. Getting wool from the sheep. They're focusing on all these tiny things on top of their main crop for profit. While at the same time trying to feed themselves. And, you know, they have to make a profit to pay rent, basically. What interests me the most was all the little tricks and stuff they do all throughout the series and the building techniques.
Mm-hmm. Now I saw them getting ready to build some kind of a pig for the wild pens.
A Waddle and Dob
the fence. Pen for the wild pigs. I said that completely backwards. A pig for the wild pens.
Yeah, a pig pen.
Yeah, pig
pen. Yeah. So, yeah, Waddle and Dob seems super easy to do. And I thought about coming out here to your house and making, like, a small Waddle and Dob wall or something.
I just want to let everybody there know, we live on several acres of land that basically borders all the woods. I mean, I've got plenty of space, and my partner here just keeps wanting to come out here and build.
And do everything.
Yeah, he wants to build a sweat lodge, a sauna, a cider press. Now you're wanting a waddle
and... A forge, a waddle and dog, yeah. Pen of some sort. You got all this land and you don't do anything with it, and it drives me crazy. I'm stuck in an apartment and I can't do anything.
I do stuff with this land.
I built a small campsite down there.
I helped.
You helped, yes.
I don't go down there much. I've got a TV.
Yeah, yeah.
Backlog of shows on my DVD.
Yeah, I would have so much productive land going on and...
I've got like almost the whole season of Ultimate Survival Alaska in there that it's been waiting for me to watch it.
Awesome, yeah. So...
So I'm awesome.
Really a big fan of the BBC Farm series.
I probably would have finished that episode had I not waited till like 10 o'clock at night and already been sleepy by.
Right.
But it seems interesting. I mean, I like the entire concept of throwing... people into a situation like that and having to survive as they did back then. Right. I mean, because we hit this point because of people in the past doing that sort of thing. So.
Yeah.
It's always nice to revisit your roots and really see how hard they had it, what you had to do, and why the average life expectancy of somebody was 35.
Yeah. Like,
I'd be a senior citizen back then.
Yeah.
I really would be.
I would be something wrong with me since I'm not married at 32.
Oh, yeah, you'd probably be burned at the stake as a heretic.
I'd have to go buy a 16-year-old wife, good childbearing hips.
At 16, they were spinsters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, what am I thinking?
You had to court a 13-year-old.
Oh, no.
Her father would probably pay you a dowry of several goats and a horse.
I'd be interested in the goats.
Yeah, you'd eat the goats.
Yeah, just...
Sorry, Cheryl.
Their cooking technology was interesting throughout the shows. Wartime Farm was one of my favorites, where they had a paraffin oven, because apparently they had issues... They had electric ovens at that time period, and something happened in the show where they decided to go with a paraffin
oven. Refresh my memory. Paraffin.
Burning wax.
Thank you.
Sort of a liquid burning wax. Like, and I saw... Looking at it, it looked like what they're calling paraffin, because you're also thinking like the show is being translated from English to normal American English.
Oh, English.
What they're calling paraffin, I think, was actually denatured alcohol. They're alcohol-burning stoves. So I'm not sure why they call it paraffin. But anyway, because I looked into that stove. Like, I was really interested in buying one, because I built those little alcohol burning like pop cans.
I remember when you did that. Yeah,
I've got some of them. I like those. And I was like, could I, with some like sheet metal and some pop rivets, could I build my own stove out of those with like multiple burners and stuff? And then I don't ever do any baking. I mean, I hate baking, so that's not a big, it's not a big thing.
A lot of baking in survival situations.
I don't bake anything. I hate baking.
I saw Mike Hawk's wife make some kind of a cake.
Yeah.
Or something like that, a big biscuit out of like a crushed acorns or something like
that. Speaking of bread, in wartime farm, they tried some crazy, because rations got a little crazy at the time.
Oh, yeah.
There's no food. And apparently, like, they're talking like it was really bad for the British, but for the Germans, it was even worse. So one of the recipes that the Germans were having to eat during this time was called, what was it, silage bread?
I think I've heard of that.
Silage, like, they made bread, it was black, because it was, like, made with, like, molded bad grain and stuff, and sawdust was one of the fillers in it.
Oh my god, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Sawdust filled bread?
Yeah, like it was sort of filler. And for the show, they recreated this and baked a loaf of this silage bread. Is it silage bread? I'm trying to Wikipedia this live.
And where can you find Wikipedia?
Wikipedia.com. No, I guess.
Well, maybe you're making that up.
No, I'm saying the name wrong.
Is it Salone bread? German?
It was a German bread they ate during World War II. And it had sawdust. So let's use Dr. Google and find this.
Well, let's see here.
That's it.
There we go.
Commissar Brat? Because it was a sort of rye bread. It was black.
Commissar Brat. Let's see. Is a dark type of German bread baked from rye and other flours historically used for military provisions. It has a firm but not hard crust. And because it's normally baked in a loaf pan, it develops a crust on top. It's noted for its long shelf life. 16th century. It has, commis has been used as a word for military troops, so Kommissbrot was used to mean bread provided for the military, since Brot is the German word for bread. Is this the right
thing? That's not it.
That's not it. German meal of sawdust and bread for World War I.
Sure.
Let's try that one. Are you going to edit this?
Nope.
I didn't think so. Well, it doesn't want to load. Well, anyway, was this
well,
let's just move.
I can't remember the name, but yeah, it was
somebody out there, if you find it, just throw it up, comment on this episode once we post it, and give us the real name. We'll give you a shout-out on the next episode.
Fermented sawdust. Disgusting.
Anyway,
so I highly recommend the show. You can watch all of them. I watched them all on YouTube. I thought about ordering the DVDs just because I want to support the people that make the show. Mm-hmm. It's so good. But yeah, all these little tips like that, how to make. They go through all the building stuff and then all the cooking stuff, slaughtering of animals, growing crops, wild forage. Like, part of what interests me is like some of the side jobs they do throughout history to make money, like.
Oh, they even do side jobs?
They do side jobs. Like, they're like, oh, we live on this coast. And in one of the shows, I think it was Tudor Monastery. So they could bring in salt water and then, like, refine it to get the
to extract the salt
out of it. And it was, like, a low-quality salt. So they had different quality salts. Like, they had, that was a low-quality salt. They used that for cleaning purposes.
You know, that's what Gandhi had the Indian people do to get rid of the British rule.
What?
They were dependent on, the reason that India was dependent on the British for a while is because of the salt. The Brits were importing the salt. Well, Gandhi told the Indian people to go down to the sea and get the salt. So they started extracting the salt from the sea so they wouldn't need the Brits anymore.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Just a side note.
Yeah.
Back on your topic.
I like side notes.
Yeah.
So yeah. And that got me thinking about, 'cause I try not to use sort of another half side note here. I try not to use like heavy, harsh chemicals when I'm cleaning. I don't like. I try not to use a lot of bleach. I don't try to use like nasty, toxic chemicals in my apartment. And then, you know, for centuries they use salt. And salt has a lot of antimicrobial, antibacterial properties.
So, now, I know you clean your cast iron with salt.
I do clean my cast iron with salt now.
How exactly does that work anyway?
It's just salt's almost like a Brillo pad in there.
Oh, okay.
You just pour salt in there. It sort of absorbs some of the grease and stuff that's left over. And then I use a paper towel or something. I scrub it and scour it and then just brush it out.
That's what I'm doing wrong.
That way it also stays dry. And then any moisture left in it, the salt will absorb.
Fascinating.
Yeah, if it's something gets really sticky in there, I'll put some water in it and boil it and then scrape it out and then pour it out and then put it back on the stove under like low heat and then dry it out and then put oil in it and let it sit. You don't want to, definitely don't want to like wash it really.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So many good things. Mining, making charcoal. I mean, it's just an amazing series. Highly recommend it. You should give it another shot.
I think I will at some point.
Maybe two doors off the one for you. Like, check out Wartime Farm or something.
I think that one might be more up my alley. I'll definitely have to give that one a look. Alrighty, is there anything else you wanted to say about the farm series?
No, I think we can move along now.
Alright, well, to our loyal listeners out there, I need to announce a death on the show. I'm retiring a segment that we've been doing pretty much since the beginning. For the simple fact that I'm really horrible at doing homework on it. We're no longer going to be doing Mike's Survival Movie Pick of the Week.
Unless you're one of the several listeners that listen and absolutely love that series, email me, jamesurvivalpunk.com.
And be willing to email an audio file with a review on a survival movie pick. Who knows, we might actually put your audio clip on the show.
So yeah, if you love that series, let us know. And if not, then we'll see how you like the new one that Mike has came up with.
Yeah, let us know about that. But we're in its stead, I'm going to be introducing basically our first ever game on the show. Mike's Worst Cases. Basically, what I'm going to be doing, I'm going to be posing worst case scenarios to our host here, the survival punk himself, James. And seeing how he manages to ponder and muddle his way through this, see what we got going on. Right.
Mike has one of the worst case scenario survival board games with some of these super old and sometimes very funny trivia cards in it.
All right, let me see here.
It's like the time we were playing Trivial Pursuit from like 1920 or something.
Oh, that's horrible.
You were there, you remember that? What's the biggest company in the United States? We're like, Microsoft! It was like, what was it, Standard Oil and Trust?
I think it was like U.S. Steel or something like that.
Yeah, it was like, because it was, I want to say it was like a 1970s version of the board game.
Okay, so what I'm going to do, I have all these cards from this worst case scenario survival board game. And this is not the final form of the game. I mean, it very well might be. We'll see how this goes. Because I'm thinking about changing it out sometimes. It's still going to be a game of worst-case scenarios.
At some point, I want to pick up the new survival card game, Conflicted, and play some of that on air.
Well, we'll try that. But
if you're the creators of Conflicted, I would love you to send me a copy of the game.
Okay, well, what I'm going to do right now, I have selected five cards at random from the desk. And what I'm going to do, one by one, I'm going to ask these to James here. And if he manages to get 3 out of 5... he wins our non-prize for the week.
Non-prize.
Right. If he wins, he does not get a kiss from me on the cheek. All right, let's get right into this. Now, Survival Punk. These are
It's neat. I've been called that a few times, actually.
You have been called Survival Punk?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought I was the first. I don't feel special anymore. Okay. Now, I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm going to give you 3 multiple choice answers.
Okay.
And you tell me which one it is. It's going to be A, B, or C. Now, how do you recognize yellow fever? A, symptoms include fever, headache, and red eyes within 6 days of exposure to jungle mosquitoes. B, Symptoms include sore throat and sniffles within 48 hours of exposure to Asian or African desert fleas. Or C, symptoms include chest pains, numbness, and fatigue within 2 weeks of exposure to forest ticks. So how do you recognize yellow fever?
I actually have no idea, but I'm leaning towards C.
C, symptoms include chest pains, numbness, and fatigue within 2 weeks of exposure
right.
to forest ticks. Survey says... Sorry, the correct answer was A, symptoms include fever, hence yellow fever, headache, and red eyes within 6 days of exposure to jungle mosquitoes.
Jungle mosquitoes.
So that is none out of five so far.
Right.
All right, next question. How do you consume moldy food? A, throw the food out. The presence of mold indicates contamination.
Nah.
B, trim off the mold. The rest of the food should be okay to eat. Or C, don't waste any part of the food, including the mold. Mold is the basis for antibiotics and can be eaten.
I would lean towards C, but a lot of the mold that would be growing on the food, I'd be a bit iffy about eating. So I would, under a survival situation, cut the mold off and consume the food.
So you're going with B?
I'm going with B.
Final answer?
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Yes, trim the mold off. The rest of the food should be okay to eat. It's funny. My dad taught me growing up, you can cut the mold off of cheese and it's okay. But he says if the mold is in the bread, throw it away. But apparently it's okay to just pull the mold off.
Yeah.
I threw out a bunch of bagels earlier.
Yeah.
Well, our producer did.
Oh, well.
But they were really, really moldy.
Yeah, probably gross.
Yeah, they were. It was a science experiment.
You should dig a hole in the yard and make a methane digester. I'm going to build that out here, too.
Do what, say, huh?
Methane digester, so it breaks down.
That's going to be the next part of the weird...
What can we do on Mike's land?
Yeah, that should be a segment on the show.
What can we do on Mike's land?
You're going to get sued by Klondike Bar.
Yeah, I don't care.
Okay, next question.
They don't listen.
All right, this is a good one. How to recognize mononucleosis? A, symptoms include swelling of the tongue, headache, and blurred vision. B, symptoms include dark spots on the neck, runny nose, and itchy eyes. Mm. Or C, symptoms include sore throat, fever, and swollen glands.
C. Yep.
Correct. Symptoms include sore throat, fever, and swollen glands. Mononucleosis, also called mono.
Also called like the kissing...
The kissing disease. Yeah. Right. How did you know that so quickly? You didn't even have to ponder that one.
Well, I know mononucleosis. I mean, I've never had it, but I knew the symptoms of it, unlike yellow fever, which I did not know.
Moving on. Okay, you've got two so far. You only need one more to win. All right. How to treat an infected wound without antibiotics. Do you A, probe the wound with a sterile instrument to drain any pus? B, drink the milk of a dandelion, then rub the flour on the wound. Or C, prevent circulation to the wound and rinse it with a solution of half tobacco and half sterile water.
I don't think dandelion has any properties like that. If you had said plantain, I would have been like, that's obviously the answer there. I'm going to go with C.
Going to go with C, prevent circulation to the wound and rinse it with a solution of half tobacco and half sterile water.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to probe an open wound. That's bad.
Well, you may say it's bad, but it says it's correct. Probe the wound with a sterile instrument to drain any pus.
I'm gonna argue this and say that you listeners do not probe a wound like that. That is bad.
We have a challenge to the game.
Don't do that.
How old is the deck? Because things have changed.
Game contents 2001.
I'm gonna say no. Also, now, hospitals won't use peroxide to treat wounds like that because it has some, like, skin necrosis issues where it'll eat some parts of the flesh away. So don't use hydrogen peroxide on your open wounds either. I'll take that as a loss, but I'm telling you, the listeners, don't do that.
Okay, the name of the game for this episode is Worst Case Scenarios 13 Years Ago. All right. And lastly, I got a choice here, and I'm going to go with this one. How to defend yourself against a mountain lion. Do you A, roll into a ball on the ground with your face covered and play dead? B, fight back by hitting the mountain lion in the head and protecting your own neck and throat? C, maintain eye contact and sing The Lion Sleeps Tonight while backing away from the mountain lion? Or D, bend over, place your head between your legs, and kiss your ass goodbye?
I'm going to... This one's tricky. I mean... Fighting back, playing dead will work with a bear, but I don't think a cat will take, I think a cat will just tear you to pieces. I'm going to say you should fight back.
And the correct answer is B, fight back by hitting the mountain lion in the head and protecting your own neck and throat.
Yeah.
Now, I have fought my own share of mountain lions in my day, and I can say that they don't like being smacked in the head.
I know from experience that if you curl up in a ball and play dead, trained attack German Shepherds will leave you alone.
Trained attack German Shepherds? Well, yeah, because you're submitting. You're giving up.
You're playing dead.
But a mountain lion is hardly a trained attack German Shepherd. And it is a large cat, and cats like to play with balls.
Right. So, I win or lose?
Well, you got 3 out of 5. And you got 3.5 out of 5 based on cards that are... 13 years old, so...
Yeah, don't play around with open wounds. Like, clean them out maybe, but leave them alone.
You sure you don't want to poke at it with a stick?
Oh, that's a...
Even if it's a sterile stick?
Set that card aside. I'm gonna email Patriot Nurse from YouTube that question and have her answer it. Yes, thank you.
It's your game. You just left it here.
Patriot Nurse, expect an email.
All right, and that was Mike's Worst Cases for this week.
That was fun. I enjoyed that.
You did enjoy that? Yeah. Well, we'll keep that coming, probably with some more up-to-date cards if we can get a hold of some.
Yeah.
Something like that. All right, now it's time for our survival gadget of the week, and you want to talk about a place to hang, place to lay your head at night while hanging amongst the trees.
Yeah, I've been a convert to the hammock way of life for a while now.
Convert.
I converted to hammocks.
You converted.
So anyway, I'm a hammock hanger now. And I've had my Hennessy hammock out several times on extended camps. I took it to a week on a mountain in Missouri. I took it a week or so in Georgia. So I've had some good experience out hanging in my Hennessy hammock.
You've even camped down on my property a couple of times recently with a hammock.
Not with the Hennessy though. So I bought a Trek Light extra wide from Trek Light. I actually talked to the owner and he I hit him up for a free one to test, and it didn't work. But I did get one at wholesale prices, which was a good discount. I mean, I got a good deal on this hammock, slap strap, hanging system, everything. And the hanging system is amazing on it. I do like it.
Oh, that's good.
Very, very adaptable, very versatile. I can make it whatever I want, and then I can add extra loops when I need it. So, yeah, I finally had a chance over the past couple of nights to use that along with my entire bug-out bag sleeping system. And one night it got down to... 40s, 30s, somewhere in there. It was a cold night.
It was a cold night. It was low 40s.
Low 40s, yeah. And with my, I was actually toasty warm. I had my military sleep system and then my Fox Outfitters mat underneath that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was cold out there. I was expecting you at any time to come knocking on my window.
I was toasty warm. Like, I had to... I actually had to strip down to my boxers in the sleeping bags to keep from being too hot.
You were in your underwear in my front yard?
Yeah.
What will the neighbors think?
Yeah, well, they couldn't see me. So, yeah, I mean, I liked both times I set up my hammock out there, the Trek Light. We did it dark. We did it nighttime.
Yeah, you did.
And normally, hanging up a hammock at night can kind of be a pain, especially with the Hennessy hammock. You've got to actually tie a bunch of knots and finagle with this. This one... The hanging system is a rope, like two pieces of rope together with lots of knots in it. You just slap on your carabiner and hang it. I love how fast that is. The second time I hung it up, I couldn't quite get a knot where I wanted it because I liked it to hang a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
So what, half a second I added a new knot in there and it got right where I wanted it?
Yeah, you did. You put a knot exactly in the spot that you needed it to be.
Yeah. So I like the Hennessy hammock a lot. It's fairly wide. I will probably use it more for fall, winter, and spring camping and reserve the Hennessy for the summer camping because it has an integrated bug net and zips closed.
Ah, okay.
So that's why I like that one. And the Hennessy, it lays really flat. I like it. The way it's designed, like normally a hammock, you got to lay it at a angle.
Right.
To make it sort of lay flat. The Hennessy is made so you lay straight like normal, and the way it's cut, it does that for you.
Huh.
So you could sleep perfectly flat.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
I didn't even know they could do that with a hammock.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have a problem. Like, even in the Trek light, I just turned myself catty corner, and I was able to sleep on my side and roll around just like in a bed.
Really?
And some hammock people, they're like, I sleep perfectly flat, you know, and just... I can't do that. I roll around no matter what, and I was comfy. I liked it.
No, I've got a...
Thumbs up Trek light.
Yeah, myself and my wife, we have a couple of hammocks that you'd given us for Christmas
presents. The Enos, yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, we've actually... yeah, that was the voice of our producer over there. He doesn't get to talk on the show much, but yeah, we love our hammocks. We actually haven't had a chance to camp out in it because we do have children, and... Frankly, I don't think all four of us could fit into two hammocks, but and Lord knows if we tried, they'd want to. So we need to get them some hammocks, camp out, and, you know, get the rain gear for it and whatnot. Because
Could split a hammock.
They could not split a hammock. There's not a hammock on this planet big enough for the two of them.
Well, I'd say one at one end, the other at the other end.
Yeah, so they can kick each other all night. No, exactly. Thanks. I'd never get any sleep.
Yeah.
It's bad enough I'd be out there without my satellite.
Yeah.
And my Nintendo Wii and my Netflix.
Oh, you're terrible.
I really am.
What do we got next?
All right. It's time for our last
sponsor of the day.
Last sponsor of the day. I cannot talk right now. Survival Gear Bags.
Survivalgearbags.com, where Kelly John Doe will hook you up with all the best survival gear bags and survival equipment, including frog lube, which is what I use exclusively to clean all my weapons with.
Mm-hmm.
Love frog lube. Bring it out to the field, oil up. Gabriel's AK and kept that running nice and smooth. Good stuff. You can get your Olight Baton S10 flashlight there, which is my go-to EDC flashlight. That's the tiny flashlight I brought with me last time I was out here.
The one that I was holding while you were setting up the hammock.
That so bright from that tiny flashlight.
That thing could blind a person.
Yeah. So I love that little thing. SurvivalGearBags.com, head over to SurvivalPunk.com, and check the banners in the right-hand margin.
Okay, now it's time for a Nutrition Corner this week. You're still tripping over that card, aren't you?
Don't probe a wound ever. What's next?
They have a whole class in medical school about poking stuff with a stick. I'm pretty sure of it.
God, what's next?
Okay, it's time for Nutrition Corner, and looks like
a plethora.
Yeah, you have a plethora.
I have a plethora. Yes. So
your cornucopia overflows with things in Nutrition Corner this week, my friend.
This past week while I was on vacation, I had a date in Cookeville, Tennessee, about 2 hours away from where I live, which kind of was. I wasn't super keen on going to a date 2 hours away. I'm not big on long-distance relationships, but...
You had an ulterior motive.
I had an ulterior motive. The 3-time CrossFit world champion, fittest man on earth, Rich Froning, has his gym and lives in Cookeville, Tennessee. So my plan was to, while on this date, find a way to go take a picture in front of CrossFit Mayhem, where Rich... trains at and where the gym he operates.
You enjoying that steak, hon? You are good. I just got to run to the bathroom for about an hour and a half.
So after we get done eating, I look at the GPS and we're 6 minutes away, like the Japanese restaurant. I had a couple slices of raw fish and I was like, 6 minutes away, Well, let's go ahead and swing over there. Let's get a picture in front of it. I get there, and the front door to the gym is open. So I was like, hey, maybe I could go buy a t-shirt. Maybe there's someone in there. So I go, and there's like some people sitting outside, and there's people inside. And I was like, hey, you guys, you think I could go inside and buy a t-shirt? They're like, yeah, probably. And there's a lady behind the counter back there. Like, you open the door, so you go in the counter. And I saw some chairs and stuff. So I was like, oh, they're teaching a certification there this weekend. I forgot about that. I think I saw it on their website.
Teaching a certification. What is that? What
CrossFit
is that?
Level 1 certification.
Oh, okay.
It gives you the title of being able to teach CrossFit.
Oh, gotcha.
So I go in there to buy a shirt, and I look over, and like 15 feet away is Rich Froning teaching this cert. And like, I kind of felt guilty because I walked in, and every head in the audience like turned towards me, and they're like, it's that look you get when you walk in the classroom late.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I was like, I walked over to the counter like as quiet as I could, and I was like, hey, can I buy a t-shirt? And she's like, oh, yeah, come on back. So we went around, and I was able to pick out the shirt that I wanted, which is a black one that says, what's Rich doing?
Really?
Yeah. Because everyone's like, what's the champ doing? You're like, because he has the craziest work ethic ever. Like, before the last CrossFit open workout, everyone else is like at the pregame, you know, sitting around relaxing. He's like in his prep room deadlifting 500-pound repeats just to kill time.
To kill time. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, he's got, like, you turn your head and, like, don't look at him, and he'll be squatting something. Like, he's just caught, like, he has the best work ethic in CrossFit, and that's why he's a 3-time world champ.
That's awesome.
Hopefully going to be the forthcoming champ here this summer.
I could just imagine your date.
So this is why you keep accidentally calling me Rich today.
So yeah, it was neat. Like I kind of stared on my way out, you know, because not often do you get to meet an idol like that. Not that I met him, but being like 20 feet away from, like, for you, if you got to be 20 feet away from
Kevin Smith,
buying something at his comic shop, like, even if you couldn't say hi and go talk to him, just being that close to him, you respect that much.
Just basically occupying that same space right on the planet. Yeah, I know.
Right. So yeah, it just.
Seeing one of your heroes right there.
Yes. Yeah, so I was super excited.
I remember when your hero used to be Stan Lee.
Who I've also been 10 feet away from.
I know. You're also a few feet away from my hero, Kevin Smith.
Yeah, he was in there somewhere. His line was long. At the San Diego Comic-Con 2005.
But so, that has nothing to do with survival unless you're just trying to survive a Comic-Con.
Yeah. So, today at CrossFit, I just wanted to share that I broke a couple personal records.
What PR means.
Yes, personal records, which is good because yesterday I went to a late class and I just sort of had some like brain fog. I was just like not feeling strong. So I could barely hit my previous personal records on a couple lifts yesterday. So I felt kind of like
you plateaued for a second.
I felt kind of there, you know, like bad, but I was like, well, you know, you can't PR every day.
I'll just
call it a bad day and move on.
Matter of fact, when you were telling me that story earlier, that's exactly what I said. You can't constantly go in there breaking records.
Right. So today we're going to do try to find our one rep max in the deadlift. My previous one rep max in the deadlift, I think I set back in December, and I did a 235 one rep max in the deadlift, and I knew because of the workout I did last month, the end of last month, the CrossFit Open, that I could do 225 pounds for 12 repetitions. So obviously, when I did that workout, I knew that I could beat one rep on 235.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously. So today, I was able to add 30 pounds to my one rep max and do 265.
New personal best for you?
New personal record.
That's awesome.
After that, our workouts recently have been like a twofers. Like, you do find your one rep max on this and then go do this, which I kind of like. I kind of like the twofers. And it's funny how it went from deadlift into running a 1 mile for time.
Hmm.
So I actually came in second in the class running the 1 mile with a 9:17.
Really?
So yeah, I ran a 9:17 mile, which actually is a personal record for me. I think my previous personal record was a 10-minute mile.
Huh. That's pretty good.
And a 10-minute mile is pretty hard.
I can imagine.
Yeah. I mean, it was... so, yeah. I flat out juked it the last 400 meters of that run just as hard as I could. Because I kind of paced myself really, you know, like at a good like jogging pace.
Mm-hmm.
And one guy is a soccer player, so he got done at 6 minutes. You know, and there's another guy that...
you could take him.
No, I couldn't.
Yeah, eventually you'll be able to take him.
Maybe.
I admire your work ethic.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, I can just see it one day down the road. You're going to set so many records that one day you'll have realized, oh my God, there's Rich Froning, and he's wearing a Survival Punk t-shirt? I can die a happy man now.
If I would have had a Survival Punk t-shirt to leave there yesterday, or the day before, I would have done that.
You would have saw that man wipe off his brow and throw it in the garbage.
Yeah. I actually meant to look if Rich is into survival, because I've seen videos of him shooting shotguns and AR-15s.
Really?
So, his AR-15 looks really nice, but if you're the champ making champ money, you can afford that. Yeah. I'm like, wow, that's... Yeah, I got excited. There's a video like a Day in the Life of Rich Froning, and they showed him out there shooting his AR, and I was like, yes! And, you know, he's from Tennessee, he hunts and everything. So, yeah. So, I ran a 9:17 mile. I was second in the class. Good day. I left happy, and I felt like I did a good job that day, today.
And let me guess, you celebrated by treating yourself to a massage.
No, but a couple weeks ago during the CrossFit Open, a local massage place that caters to the athletic crowd, CrossFit and bodybuilders and stuff, Warrior Massage and Wellness out in Franklin, Tennessee,
mm-hmm.
They had a special that if you had signed up for the CrossFit Open, like me, you could get a huge discount on their thing. I think it was like $60 for a one-hour massage.
Wow, buck a minute, huh?
Something like that. So, yeah, I was like, yeah, you know, I've never had a massage before. I kind of want to treat myself and use this discount that I got, and you'll see it.
So how was the massage?
It was like painful, amazing heaven.
but you felt like a Kobe cow, didn't you?
It felt amazing. Like, before, I'd had, you know, girlfriends or whatever giving neck rubs or back rubs or something. And this is on a level so much higher than that. You can't even compare the two. It's like, hey, rub my back. And this is like, even my soul feels better after this.
Oh, my God.
It was, I'm like, can I budget in a monthly massage? Like, I'm trying to run the numbers here. Once I pay my car off, I think I can afford a monthly massage. Like, because it was a deep tissue massage. And after the workout I did that day, oh, my God. She's.
You know what you should do?
What?
Now that we're local celebrities, you should ask them if they'd like to be a sponsor for survivalpunk.com.
I would easily trade sponsorship on this podcast for one massage a month.
You hear that out there? You hear that out
actually,
there, survival?
The lady that runs
Battle Massagers?
I think she signed up for our email list, so she may be listening.
Oh, awesome.
What's Kelly, I think.
What's the name of that place again?
Warrior Massage and Wellness.
Warrior Massage and Wellness?
There will be a link to their Facebook page and whatnot in the show notes.
Think about it. That'll be the cheapest sponsorship ad you ever got.
Yeah. Probably, well, let's see, I charge about $500 for a year sponsorship, so that would be 5 months of massages. Every other month or so, yeah, hook it up.
Hook it up. Alrighty, okay, now looks like it's time for my celebrity invite to this week. Now, I had one person in mind, but I've actually changed my mind on that midstream, because that's the kind of show that we run here. And I would like to send out this celebrity invite to one Mr. Rich Froning. You heard my partner here, the Survival Punk himself, James. Big, huge fan. He drove 2 hours and used a woman just so he could see you. Just so he could occupy your space. So, Rich Froning, you've got an open-ended invitation, an open-door invitation to be on Survival Punk anytime. And my boy here will throw in a free t-shirt for you if you grace our humble little show. Well, you know what? It has been an excellent show. I think this has been one of our best yet, to be honest with you. I mean, we've
Well, we had really good feng shui.
Yeah, you feng shui'd the show?
Feng shui.
You better have bought a broom. I'm serious. I'm not having any feng shui in my podcast.
I freaked your wife and kids out earlier with a broom trick I know.
Really? God. Is it the one where you cross your legs and then you step forward and knock yourself on your tuchus?
No. Your daughter was like doing like finger things. Like your son was like bending his finger back like that. And my finger bends back way further than his and your daughter's do.
It really does. That's freaky. It made my hand hurt a little bit.
My younger brother could actually bend his fingers back and touch his wrist.
Ah! That hurts. Yeah.
So, and then they were talking about, like, his toes bend back, and they were, like, talking about, you know, like, their flexibilities, and I was like, I got something to show you. So, I grabbed a broomstick behind my head, like that, and then took it over...
Yeah.
Took it over the back of my head. Like, imagine if you had handcuffs on and you flipped your hands over the top of your head. And then my shoulder kind of popped out a little bit, and your wife was like, oh!
I wish we had camera for this. I mean, I wish this was a broadcast.
We could shoot YouTube video of it or something for the site.
We should throw it up on the site.
My YouTube coach, Nick, hates it. Like, he saw me do that at gym one time.
Your YouTube coach?
CrossFit coach. He was like, what did you just do? And I did it again. He's like, don't ever do that again. Don't. He's like, that's why your shoulders are weird.
I have extra mobility in my shoulders.
Like, people can't do that apparently.
No, that's not a normal thing.
Yeah.
That's a rare thing.
He's like, if you're overhead squatting, instead of your shoulders ripping out, your hands will just go behind you. Yeah, that's a pause.
God, I want to see the visual on that. I would
hate for a loaded barbell to flip behind me and hit me in like the kneecaps.
No.
I'll show you after we get off.
You're gonna end up in a
wheelchair. I'll show you after we get done podcasting.
Yeah. Well, I think that'll about do it for the Survival Punk podcast for this week. I'm Mike,
and I am James.
And just remember, if you're doing one of those 500-pound deadlifts and you got trick shoulders, just be careful you don't take your own knees out. See you next week.